And joining us on the WBGO Journal is WBGO's award-winning jazz writer and author, Nate Chenin. Nate, great to see you.
Good to see you, Doug.
Well, we're going to talk about some troubling times. You know, one of the most recent things we talked to you about, Nate, on the Journal was how artists were struggling around the country because of coronavirus early on and getting, you know, the club meetings and the venues and the concerts going. And here we are coming all the way back several months later, and the jazz venues are in desperate trouble right now, and one of them being Birdland. And you just wrote a wonderful article on the WBGO website talking about the details of a GoFundMe campaign that Birdland has had to go through, including a number of layoffs at the club. Tell us where Birdland is right now.
Well, the club is in kind of a holding pattern, as many bars, restaurants, and nightclubs are in the city and across the country. But this is, you know, a particular case because Birdland is, of course, a entertainment venue. It's a live music venue. It's a really important club for jazz and for Broadway. And it occupies some of the most expensive real estate in New York City. You know, it's a space just off of Times Square in the theater district. And so despite some negotiation with the landlord, owner Gianni Valenti has been having to pay rent on a dark space, as well as, you know, utilities and real estate taxes and various other expenses. And as you know, there really is no possibility of defraying those costs by having shows and having audiences in the room. So it's been a real tough situation. And, you know, unless there is some urgent action, you know, we run the risk of losing this space, just as we lost the Jazz Standard last month, and other venues across the country. So, you know, it's a real crisis moment for independent venues.
Now, I just checked out the GoFundMe campaign total right before we started this interview, and they're doing well. The GoFundMe pages have worked well for many of the arts groups, and this one in particular as well. What do people need to do if they want to, you know, support venues like Birdland?
Well, you know, it's real simple. They're asking for money to, you know, to support and sustain the club. In the case of the Birdland GoFundMe, it's a real simple plea for support in any, you know, amount. And, you know, I should say that this is far from the only venue that has mounted a campaign like this. Down in Baltimore, Keystone Corner has a GoFundMe that is also operative. Chris's Jazz Cafe in Philadelphia is doing something similar. And so, you know, it's really worth thinking about where you want to spread that support. You know, these clubs, you know, it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it. These are the lifeblood of the jazz community. You know, this network of clubs, it's not just a place for fans to have a good time. This is really the infrastructure that supports this community. And if we lose them, it's going to be really difficult to rebuild that. So it's not just the needs of the venue owners that we are supporting when we rally behind them.
You've been writing about the jazz community for more than two decades. So how does this make you feel, knowing that we could be losing iconic clubs during this pandemic?
Well, I'll tell you, the loss of the Jazz Standard was very, very tough for me. That was a club that I probably saw several hundred shows there, you know, over the years. I was there when it opened, and it was the final club that I was in before lockdown happened in March. And I was very much looking forward to going back there, you know? So for me, it's really a tragedy, you know, it's on top of the tragic loss of life that we've witnessed, all of the economic hardship and suffering that extends throughout this community, musicians and listeners, you know, fans. I mean, everybody is hurting. But with these venues, it's hard for me because really this music thrives in spaces like this. You know, everybody loves a festival, And I, you know, I can't wait to go back to the Newport Jazz Festival and other outdoor festivals. But, you know, really the music lives in these rooms. You know, it lives in places like the Village Vanguard and Smalls and Birdland, you know, where the audience is really a part of the musical creative process. You know, any improvising artist will tell you that they feel the vibe of the room, they feel the energy of the listeners. When you attend one of these shows, you are a part of that process. And so it's, you know, for me, it's all the more important for us to remember that, you know, artists need our support, and so do the venues.
And in Birdland's basement, the connection to Broadway is strong there with another venue for about 200 people that go there. Broadway community also helping out, and they're hurting too. They're not expected to be back for quite some time. So
Yeah.
everyone's in this together, aren't they, Nate?
That's right. And you know, I have to say, the success of the Broadway, I mean, the success of the Birdland GoFundMe so far, really owes a lot to the organizing power and the sort of can-do spirit of the Broadway community. You know, the people who have started this GoFundMe are much more connected to Broadway than they are to jazz, and they have been really, really instrumental in, you know, in just raising the red flag here, and spreading the word. And so it's one of those, as you say, Doug, it's a great illustration of the connection that these various creative communities have in a city like New York. You know, we really are all in this together, and I think a crisis like this really illustrates how we rise and fall together. And so this is a moment to attempt to come together and rise above.
We're speaking with WBGO's Director of Editorial Content, author, and award-winning jazz writer Nate Chenin here on the WBGO Journal. Nate, when we look at how people have adjusted, both musicians and artist groups and nonprofits, to having just what we're doing, an online chat or maybe a concert that's online, everyone has been adjusting and finding new ways to reach audiences. When we hear about these jazz venues, these are worldwide known venues that people have traveled all over to come see. So this isn't just like, this is just about New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, LA, any place like that that might have a jazz venue. People from all over the world can contribute to these GoFundMe campaigns. And as Gary Walker always mentions on Morning Jazz, that sense memory of, you talked about the last time you were at the Jazz Standard. People remember when they were at these clubs, and they don't want to see them go away. And I think that's why these GoFundMe campaigns hopefully will come through at least as a stopgap, because we
Right.
don't know when everybody's going to be okay.
Right. No, that's actually absolutely true. And I think, something you just said reminded me to mention an interesting data point that I got when I was speaking with Johnny Valenti, the owner of Birdland. He said that under normal circumstances, 60 to 70% of their patronage comes from outside the United States. You think about that for a second. You know, that's much more than half of their clientele. And so what does that mean at a time when travel is curtailed, when hotels are not, packing people in? You know, people are not coming to New York the way they usually do. And in addition to that, there are all kinds of regulations issued by New York State that have to do with what is permissible. Even when people were allowed inside restaurants, they were not, venues were not allowed to advertise musical artists. They were not allowed to issue a cover charge or a minimum. And so there have been these kind of weird workarounds that places have had to do in order to operate at all. You know, it's one of those bureaucratic hassles that really kneecapped a lot of these places that, you know, after months of being dark completely, they tried to get something happening, and even when they did, they ran into one frustration after another. So, you know, it's really been a difficult run for a lot of these places.
Restaurants in New York City and New Jersey and elsewhere have been going through the same thing, trying to, reinvent themselves to try to get to stay afloat. But one thing when it comes to the musicians, one thing that I think that we've learned through this pandemic is creativity goes a long way. They have been able to adjust. They have been able to, you know, recently we had the wonderful Stephen Van Zandt talking about, you know, his Stand With Teachers event and how they're getting their curriculum out there about music history and how everyone is finding different ways to connect to students and educate them and for the musicians to get their word out. Dave Stryker is always on social media, you know, getting even just the spirit of jazz out there, maybe just a pick-me-up, you know, on a certain day. Right. You have to respect what these artists are doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, don't ever bet against a jazz musician when it comes to resilience. You know, that is really like built into the character of this art form. You know, you really can't keep a jazz artist down. These are the most daunting challenges that this community has ever faced. But we are seeing evidence everywhere of resourcefulness and determination and goodwill and community. You know, in that piece that I wrote about Birdland, I mentioned, you know, some of the other clubs that are struggling. And I quoted something from the email list of Smalls Jazz Club, which is owned by a pianist named Spike Wilner. Spike said, "Clubs around the country are dropping like flies. And perhaps I'm delusional, but I don't want to give up. We can't give up. Not yet."
And we certainly don't want to see them give up. And if you go to Nate's article on the website at WBGO.org, you will also see the site where you can just one click and you're there for the GoFundMe campaign for Birdland. You also have written books about jazz. So if you were to write a book right now about 2020 and jazz, I would imagine it would be so emotional for you. We lost so many musicians last year. And here we're talking about the jazz venues and we're talking about financial survival of the artists. It probably would be a very difficult book for you to write.
It certainly would. I feel like I'm, in a way, I'm writing it every day, you know, just by chronicling and bearing witness to all the adaptations and the, you know, the small success stories and the struggles. You know, it's going to take some time and distance to really draw a clear bead on everything that has happened, because we're so in it. But I think it's very clear that we're going to see just how monumental this struggle has been. And, you know, there's no question that it will have an impact on the state of the art and on the way that we experience the art. I don't know about you, but whenever it's possible for me to sit in a room with strangers again safely and not be worried about it, and have a drink and hear, you know, one of my favorite bands, I mean, that's going to be a very, very good night.
We're all united in this. And speaking of united, your podcast with Greg Bryant is Jazz United. Let's talk about how during this pandemic you've launched this podcast and some of the goals that you'd like to see, you know, this podcast create and eventually lead to, you know, the success of the jazz world again.
Sure. You know, I mentioned that one of the last gigs I saw was at the Jazz Standard. One of those was actually the first night I hung out with Greg Bryant, weeks into his tenure as Jazz After Hours host at WBGO. You know, we decided to just to get to know each other a bit. And at the end of that night, after, you know, having some barbecue and hearing Ravi Coltrane, we kind of both said, man, this is a good hang. We're, you know, this conversation is just flowing. We really, you know, we're really sort of vibing off each other. So it wasn't far into the pandemic. It was really maybe about a month in that I hit him up and said, you know what, I think we should start something, you know. And it was a period where everybody was just doing what they can, you know. News reporters and radio people were setting up temporary mobile recording units in their closets, you know, and so we kind of just did this in a very build it in your garage DIY fashion. But during that time, I think we've really hit on something, and you know, it just amounts to informed conversation about whatever is happening in the music. So our new episode just published. It's out on every podcast platform. And it's a conversation about the Pixar film Soul, Which in some ways is a jazz film, and Greg and I both have some mixed feelings about it. And so the conversation is really just all about hashing out, like, well, why do we feel this way? What does it get right? What does it not get so right? What do we wish it had done better? And that's kind of the spirit of the show, just taking whatever is the water cooler conversation around the music, or sometimes taking an anniversary, like we did a 50th anniversary tribute to Herbie Hancock's Mwandishi Band, and just taking that as an excuse to really dive deep. And what I love about it, Doug, is that Greg really, really knows the music and has just such a deep understanding of it. But he and I have different blind spots and we have different strengths. And so, it's really cool to hear him, just give me a perspective I hadn't thought about. Or sometimes we come together on something and we just sort of nerd out on it. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun for me.
And that's what makes the world go round. We all have different opinions and we all have our favorite jazz venues, and everyone wants to see their particular venue survive during the coronavirus pandemic. If you want to find out more about this most recent article again and the GoFundMe campaign for Birdland, you can go to WBGO.org. It's also where you can find the Jazz United podcast. Nate, always a great hang with you during the WBGO Journal. Continued success, and let's keep it going.
Amen to that. Thank you, Doug.